And Kazuntai. All right. Research hypotheses with R and chi-square, like F, are about what's going on in the population. We don't hypothesize about our sample. Our sample is there to be representative and to make an inference from. Bad sentence, good idea. If we wanted to push it even farther, we would say that our research hypotheses are about the relationships between constructs, not between the variables that are represented. Different communities emphasize that more or less. Okay? So, it tells us the variables, it tells us the direction of the expected linear relationship and the population of interest. Keep in mind that as research folks, as data analysts, not statisticians, we insist on the opportunity to hypothesize no linear relationship. We insist on the opportunity to express our research hypotheses as nulls, because we don't believe that all variables are interestingly and importantly related to each other. Maybe that's just a simplifying assumption because we don't want to face a world where everything is meaningfully correlated to each other. Or maybe it's a good representation of the universe. I think it's that one. The null hypothesis is always no linear relationship. The synonym is linear relationship and correlation. Linear association and correlation. The word linear is part of the synonym for correlation. Association is not a synonym for correlation. Linear association is. Relationship is not a synonym for correlation. Linear relationship is. Use all the words. Make things simpler for the people that you're talking to. But pay careful attention to whether they're doing anything to make things simpler for you. We have this slide everywhere we look. What we do is look at probabilistic evidence. Probabilistic, quantitative, empirical evidence. We get our sample. We get our data. From our data, we calculate a summary statistic. Now we're talking about the summary statistic, Pearson's correlation. From that, we calculate the probability of getting that summary statistic if the null were true. And we decide whether to retain or reject the null. Decide. Conclude. No truth, no proof, no absolutes. We got our data and a conclusion. If we retain the null, what we're saying is the relationship in the sample isn't strong enough to act like there's a relationship in the population. If we reject the null, we're saying the relationship in the sample is strong enough to act like there's a relationship in the population. That's exactly what we're doing. Some people say, is that all we're doing? Yeah, that's it. You want more evidence? Go get more research. That's the importance of the research loop, the replication, the convergence, all that good, sexy stuff. When you're doing correlations by hand, which I hope you never will, except in the pink thing, I want you to practice, just in case somebody walks up to you with the results of their hand calculation. Remember that the critical value from the table will always be given as positive. But remember that correlation is a two-tailed thing. A distribution of correlations will be centered at zero and will go out to plus one and minus one. The critical value will always be given as positive. You have to remember that it applies to negative. So, the rule is, if the absolute value of the obtained, that's what the bars on the ends mean, the absolute value of the R is less than the critical retain, if the absolute value is greater than the critical reject. If you're working in any friendly statistical package, you get our friend the p-value and the usual decision. The research hypothesis was that older adolescents would be more polite. I don't even thought of this. Sample of 84 adolescents were asked their age and to complete the politeness quotient questionnaire. I have an obtained of 0.453. I have a critical of 0.254. Is my obtained larger than my critical? Yes. Am I going to retain or reject?
Reject.
Awesome. Now, like everything else in here, slow down. Ask all the intermediate questions. Don't bounce around. Look at the p-value or the critical value and test the null. Stop. Take a breath. Take a look at the data. That is a positive correlation. Look for the research hypothesis. Older adolescents, more polite. Older adolescents, more polite. Is that hypothesizing a positive or a negative correlation?
Positive.
Positive. Did we get a significant positive correlation? Do these data support the hypothesis?
Yes.
Yeah. If we had gotten a non-significant positive correlation, would that have supported the research hypothesis?
No.
No, because it's non-significant. We're going to treat it like zero. How are we doing? So, yes, we have support for the research hypothesis. Older professors would receive lower student course evaluations. This was funnier when I was younger. A sample of 124 introductory psych students from 12 different sections completed the student evaluation. Professors' ages were obtained. I got a correlation of negative 0.152. I have a p-value of 0.431. Is p less than 0.05?
No.
Retain or reject the null?
Retain.
All right, so I'm going to retain the null. The original correlation is older professors would receive lower evaluations. Older, lower. Is that hypothesizing a positive, zero, or negative correlation?
Negative.
Negative. Did we get a significant negative correlation?
No.
No. We retained the null. So we're going to treat that negative 0.15 just like it was zero. So do we support the research hypothesis?
No.
No. On both the correlation and the chi-square, in the correlation and the ANOVA, there's no possibility for partial support of a hypothesis. There's only three possibilities, greater than, less than, equal to. For correlation, there's three possibilities, positive, zero, negative. The research hypothesis either is one of them or it isn't, but no partial. We'll see partial when we get to chi-square. We get one of these for every table, too, or for every statistical model, too. This is statistical conclusion validity. Did we get it right? With all the bits and pieces that went into this, we got a set of data, we crunched it through a correlation. Did we get it right? So only three possibilities in the population, positive, zero, and negative correlation. When we are done analyzing our data, we make one of three decisions, that we found a negative, a zero, or a positive correlation with all the usual results. It could be that we got a correctly rejected null. We rejected the null and our data have the direction of linear relationship that matches the population. We might have gotten it right by having a correct retention. We didn't find anything, nothing there to find. And then we have the usual array of type 1, type 2, and the ugly colored one, type 3. Remember, type 3 is not in there just to torment you. It's in there because as data analysts, as theorists and practitioners, we really need to separate getting the effect right and getting the effect backwards or sideways. Okay, a type 1 and a type 2 error is not enough because sometimes things come out backwards. When you're doing meta-analyses or when you're looking for replication, everybody treats a flipped sign as a nightmare. Oh, no, no, no. It's an opportunity. Something went awry. And it might be that the person who found the one that's backwards or sideways from everybody else found something rather than screwed something up. It could be a different population that was sampled. Remember, external validity drives statistical conclusion validity. It might be that the stimuli or the task they had people using produced a different result. It could be the setting. Oh, we found a lot of that in social psychology. A well-controlled setting with really well-behaved people doesn't always predict the real world. Some of that early conformity stuff was all run with freshmen, with not just freshmen, but fresh fraternity members. And in the 50s, being a member of a fraternity pretty much was a stamp of willingness for conformity. We got effects in some of those studies that nobody ever got again, even though they're in all the intro texts. So you got to remember that that type 3, that one that's backwards from what you expected, might not be a type 3 because it's not from the same population as the rest of the studies. When something is not just on or off unexpectedly, but backwards or sideways, go back and read the method section again. Because if you can find a couple of those, you have another piece of research to do. In my research program, the dissertation was to find a conflict in the literature and sort it out methodologically. That was the shit where I was raised. Turns out that I had a parent literature of 11 studies. It was a wildly popular topic, but it had only been carefully studied about 15 times, 11 of which were laboratory studies. And they found 5 different results across 11 studies. So people would say, oh, don't do that, you don't have a literature to review. Oh, yes, I do. I got shit strewn all over the place. Let's figure out what's going on. And in the dissertation, I was literally able to reproduce everybody else's results in one study and anticipate which conditions were going to be what results. Why? Methods. And 2 of them were statistical problems. Methods. That's why we started with it here. That's why we always go back to it. Whence came the data? And all the decisions went into that, which we call all of that sampling now. That's why I keep saying this over and over. This is what will make you recognize opportunities that other people will miss. Because you're thinking about where the data came from, not just the p-value.